My name is Bronson Hermuth, and I'm coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, Music City, USA. And today I have the great honor to interview the one and only Mr. Bob Doerr.
Da, 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 da.
I know, we needed a drum roll or something, but I got to get a drum roll going. Well, I know you ain't been feeling too good. You think you can do this? You up for it?
I'm rip-roaring ready to go.
You were born.
I'm hoping that I can interview you as you interview me.
You were born in Chicago, Illinois, January 12, 1952.
Right downtown in Mount Sinai Hospital.
And how much do
and
you
I've
think?
And I've been getting smaller ever since.
How much do you think that being born in Chicago has to do with your passion and obvious love for blues music?
You know, I think it was just by osmosis. It wasn't really by design or anything. It wasn't one of those, I was born in the heyday of Chicago blues in the 50s and early 60s, and just kind of became osmosis as I grew up and listened to WLS radio, and my parents moved around the Midwest, and it was really weird as far as blues is concerned in that I first discovered the blues, or didn't even realize I was discovering the blues through the British Invasion bands. Every single one of them seemed to start out as a blues band in some way, shape, or form. But I didn't know that I'm a Man wasn't by the Yardbirds. It was by Bo Diddley or any of those Rolling Stones songs or the Animals songs. I always thought they were by those British Invasion bands. And as I grew older and older, I realized, no, this is by the real deal, guys. And so one thing led to another, and now I have a blues addiction that I cannot get rid of.
So were either of your parents musical?
My parents were hardworking, Depression-era, Midwestern, middle-class kids that had the most incredible work ethic. And as far as musical things are concerned, my mother was a little bit more musical. She had a ukulele. But when I was a kid, I remember this distinctly, and I don't know how, but Elvis was the big thing there in the mid-50s, and he would be on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I didn't know Elvis Presley from anybody, but my mother had a little ukulele, and there I am, 4 or 5 years old. She literally used an eyebrow pencil to paint sideburns on me, and brush back my hair with grease. And I became little Elvis with her ukulele. But and so it was kind of a little kid show in front of my parents, siblings, and all of that stuff. So that was about the first inclination that there was any kind of music thing going on. But my parents were not musical in any way, shape, or form. They liked music, but as far as playing music or being a musician, no.
So all of us have someone that inspired us and got us going and were really the reason that we started our path down this road to making music. For you, who would be the person or people that got you started playing music?
Well, I suppose I'm so much like everybody else of my own era, the British Invasion bands, and in particular the Beatles. And in particular of the Beatles, I really wanted to be John Lennon, but I could not seem to get the dexterous persistence to play guitar. And so at that time, I became Ringo. And my dad got me a set of drums, and I played my first gig when I was 14. And that was, some of these little mixers when you're in junior high school.
Sure.
And that band was Tortoise and the Hare, H-A-I-R. And it's been going on ever since.
Did you actually take lessons? I mean, did you do lessons on the drums, or you just start pounding on those skins?
I did have some lessons on drums, but it was mostly trying to teach people how to play the groove rather than particular paradiddles or functions of a drummer. It was mostly trying to play the groove, which is the way I play drums now. I sit behind a little three-piece kit and play drums, mostly kick and hi-hat and snare drum, and actually play harp sitting back there, not through a rack, though. I still hold on. You tell me, is playing harmonica for you a completely different instrument while you're playing it through a rack around your neck
compared to
cupping with your hands?
I've always played cupping with my hands. I have played with a rack, of course. I have several, and I occasionally do, but I don't think I've ever actually performed anywhere live playing with the rack. I've always held with my hands.
It just seems like a completely different instrument to me.
It really is. And so when did you start playing harmonica?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to tell you that I started playing harmonica because it was hard to get chicks sitting in the back.
But when was it, though?
And
I liked
singing. I was a singing drummer right from the get-go. And so I moved out front after I had some real, real eye-opening experiences, not the least of which was interviewing Muddy Waters in the women's locker room of Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. There I am sipping champagne out of styrofoam cups with the godfather of Chicago blues. And that night, he had a band that had Bob Mergolin and Willie Big Eyes Smith on drums, and the classic Muddy lineup of the 70s. And it was like some kind of epiphany or something, but bang, there I was. Nothing really mattered. No music really mattered besides the blues after that.
So, Knight, that was 1974. You were 22 years old.
Yeah.
Is that crazy that you were interviewing Muddy Waters when you were 22?
Unbelievably crazy, and I didn't even realize it at the time. I mean, I knew I was sitting in the presence of greatness, but it's now that I realize what a magnitude that was. I got to meet and talk with him again about 2 years later when he played at Hancher Auditorium in Iowa City. But in the interim, I got to also meet and interview Willie Dixon, the greatest blues songwriter ever.
Yeah.
And between those two, my goodness.
So,
an opportunity for a kid to have to speak with those people.
It really was, you know, and I one thing I found out about you doing the research on you was you started, I'm not sure what if you were a founder or what, but in Minneapolis with the Little Red Rooster Band.
I did found the Little Red Rooster Band, and we did spend some time in Minneapolis trying to be big rock stars.
I remember because I was up there, you know, with the Ozone Ramblers and with Poker Flats in that era, that same time. The Little Red Rooster Band, man, was one of, you know, you guys were everywhere. I mean, everywhere we went, your poster was up there, and I remember I actually saw y'all somewhere, our paths crossed, and I was blown away with that band. And I didn't know up until I was researching it, and I saw in your bio that was your band. I was like, well, shoot, I didn't know that.
Well, we were a notorious drunken hippie circus with two women in the band, and we would play just about anywhere that would have us for, you know, this is the late 70s, so by the time we divided whatever we got six ways, we were lucky to each be making 20, 25 bucks a night.
Yeah, I understand.
But, drinks flowed heavily, and we were all part of a, like I said, hippie circus that became more notorious for for our presence than our music, I think.
Well, you know, you did all this stuff musically, and you were playing music, and you're obviously successful with it. And then you took a turn, you took a career turn into broadcasting, I believe.
The broadcasting career actually preceded the full-time bands that I played in. As an undergraduate at the University of Northern Iowa, I actually answered a advertisement in the student newspaper looking for student disc jockeys in the new University of Northern Iowa student radio station. And that was called a carrier current station. I don't know if you're familiar with carrier current, and I don't even think it exists any longer. But in 1972, the way this was configured, carrier current, the radio signal, was literally fed into the university's electrical system. UNI has its own electrical system. And the signal was literally fed down the electrical system to radios in the UNI campus. You could not pick up the radio station unless you had an actual plug-in radio, which would get the signal out of the electric system and deliver it to kids in dormitories, mostly. It was pure and simple a training ground for when to turn the turntables on and when to open the mics and things like that. Literally, here's the story I tell about my early radio career on a carrier current station. So this is early 1972, and I'm on this carrier current station, and I open the mic and I say, okay, the first person who calls me, I will give them a $20 bill. And a $20 bill in 1972 was much more valuable than it is now. Literally, you didn't have to answer a question. You just had to be the first caller. I did not get one call for that.
Oh, my God.
$20 bill. But it did teach me some very, very basic mechanics of how to be a disc jockey and all of that. And then the following summer, when I went to summer school, a changeover at the University of Northern Iowa's Broadcasting Services went from a classical station, a 10-watt classical station that operated only when the university was in session, to what became currently a 100,000-watt KUNI radio station. And there I was in the summertime, a bare amount of experience as to how to be a disc jockey, and they opened up a cornucopia of music styles that they were going to broadcast. Folk music, real kind of banjo folk music, urban and progressive rock were all part of this brand new format that a brand new director of broadcasting services who was 28 years old started. And there again, I was just in the right place at the right time with a bare amount of experience and a desire to be a radio disc jockey.
So Iowa Public Radio, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, you've actually, your history with them goes all the way back to the very first broadcast, doesn't it? In October 2nd,
1972? It was the first broadcast of that portion of Iowa Public Radio that was operated by the University of Northern Iowa. The University of Iowa and Iowa State in Ames had radio facilities, which were mostly classical programming and some jazz on the side. UNI's focus was on a variety of other musics, and I did do the first completely dedicated to rock music radio show on any of the three state university radio stations. So yeah, I was in on a very early part of that. What is that? Almost 51 years ago now.
Yes, it is. And so like 5 decades, that's a long time, man. And I tell you what, you're a household name up in Iowa. In the year 2000, you were inducted into the Iowa Rock and Roll Music Association Hall of Fame in the DJ category. And then they came right back at you in 2007. You were nominated to the Iowa Rock and Roll Music Association Hall of Fame in the band category. And I can only assume that has to be the Blue Band.
Correct. 36
Tell
and
me
a
about
half years of that.
Tell me about the
band. And in the middle of those two inductions was Iowa Blues Hall of Fame in 2005.